Hare Krishna. We consider this to be a very important part of the Govardhan or holy name retreat, because we acknowledge that during the sessions which we have, it's not always possible to attend to all the questions. There's maybe three questions, and then the time has come where we need to mostly take prasadam or do other things. And then there are questions which are overdue, so to say. So we will try our best. Piyash Maharaj, Bhujan Prabhu, myself, to answer the questions succinctly. But yesterday I spoke with Bhujan Prabhu. If there is a question, better a proper answer that is than just something which leaves you scratching your head and what now? What's this an answer? You know, like this. So we will tell you what we will do with the rest of the questions. So I request all of the devotees, Bhujan and Giyaj Maharaj, to really use their intuitive spirit and pull the right pull the questions.
Incredible ocean of questions here.
The ocean, yes. And you need to churn it now.
The ocean is unlimitedly deep. And some of the questions are quite long. When chanting, I often see that I have a state of mind where I am worried that I am not connecting with the holy name. What would you please recommend that I do to shift that mood into something sweeter? Second question is, how do
you forget the first question?
First of all, we should continue chanting. And the mood, of course, when we're not able to really connect, if we want to connect, the mood is humility. And think. So we think of the third verse, Kimana Bhishma, that Mahaprabhu himself spoke. And how does one get into the humble state? Verse before the Daivamitrisa, that we understand that Krishna so kindly made himself available through the holy names, but yet I'm not able to connect with the holy names. I don't have so much appreciation at this moment. And I'm not tasting the sweetness. So that second question is about bringing our heart into chanting more often. Maybe perhaps you would like to answer that, since that was so much your emphasis in your speaking. What do you think?
All of our inner faculties have various functions. The mind is one thing to do, accepts, it rejects, you know, the known functions. But the heart has a very important function for devotional life. The heart is the seat of the soul, and the Lord is in the heart also. The heart is also the place where spiritual revelation takes place, as it was the case with Brahma, Tene Brahma, Shridaya, Adikavaye, Mushantiya, Suryaha. This heart, which the spiritualists speak about, which the devotees speak about, is not identical, of course, with the physical heart, but also not, listen to this, the emotional heart. It's not. This heart is more a spiritual, is a spiritual place. And here, this heart needs to be exercised, just like you exercise the physical body to get muscles or stamina, or if you are having a bad back, you always sit straight and you roll the shoulders back. Many of us have this situation, I can see. And wait until you're older. If you don't do anything, you will be hunched over. So you need to exercise, do something against it if you don't wish this condition to be. So in the same way, the spiritual heart needs to be exercised if you don't want to have a forgetful attitude towards Krishna. And the way you exercise it is, first of all, you read in spiritual scriptures. Second, you can pray. And it's good in the beginning to repeat the prayers of the great acharyas, like, for instance, the Sharanagati prayers. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used one song of the Sharanagati prayers to discipline his mind. He would sing, Amara Jivan Nahi Papijan, you know, that song from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he laments his fallen condition. And as you do this, as you read these prayers, you will feel something coming up which tastes like devotion to Krishna. So prayers jumpstart you. They move you into this realm. A car which does not run on its own can be jumpstarted by an external force when people get behind it and push it, and then at one stage the driver will put the gears in, the clutch to the gears, and then and then it goes. So prayers from acharyas help us to jumpstart our bhakti, if you want a modern terminology. Reading in scriptures about Krishna, like in the Nectar of Devotion, is so important, because there only you will find out who is that one whose name I always chant. No? And then comes the memory, smaranam. Smaranam enters into your chanting. You remember actually what you have read, and then your chanting, and your chanting, your spiritual heart is awakened. Or, you know, that's why the lectures are so important during this Holy Name retreat. You remember, perhaps, I think all of us remember that wonderful lecture of Bhujang Prabhu, where he actually told how Prabhupada encouraged us that we should hear and chant and pray for strength. Do you remember that lecture? No? And you might remember then the Brijbasis who prayed for Krishna to come and help them when Indra attacked them viciously. No? So But really, to enliven the undevotional heart, or the heart to exercise, the best is to slowly, slowly start remembering what you have heard, what you lecture. This program is called Smaranam. No? Shravanam, Kirtanam, then, yes, what does this mean? Remembering about what you have heard earlier or read earlier, no? And in this way, you enliven yourself by doing this. There's a reason why there is such a sequence. Without the active participation of this, it is said, your bhajan, without remembering what through the heart, my dear devotees, it's a little dead, mechanic. So yeah, these are some thoughts. I'm just about to finish a book on this, Smaranam in the Krishna Conscious Movement.
In the first class of chanting with absorption, it was described to capture the holy name in the heart and align mind and a prayerful attitude. Please help me understand a bit more elaborately. In the book, The Living Name, well, this one's addressed to you, Maharaj, actually. I'll just continue reading it. In the book, The Living Name, the alignment process is mentioned from the body, mind, and heart. I'm less intelligent to understand this. And also, please put some light on the 16 meanings or vavas of the 16 names in the third chapter of the book, Living Name. Please say how to remember this while chanting.
Thank you very much. I will be brief. So, the first question relates to how to capture the holy name in the heart and align the mind in prayerful attitude. There is a mechanical way to bring the holy name in the heart, and that is you chant, and while you chant, you direct your consciousness to the heart. We all know wherever the mind goes, there you are. That may help. It's a technique. Sometimes we are devotees and we do not rely totally on these techniques. We may use them if they work. Here in a devotee association, I would emphasize the second way, that is the devotional way to be prayerful. When you chant, or you can change the mood. I think we all know. I noticed, for instance, when we started the session and we chanted this beautiful song, there was a shift of mood. Have you seen this happening? On the first day when Burijan Prabhu got on the stage and said, "Now everyone repeat after me." And then he chanted, "Jai Jai Sri Radhe," and requested us to lift our hands. Do you remember how the mood shifted and you were enthusiastic, and some of you smiled? Do you remember? It is possible, in other words, to change your mood and to change your mind. It is not the case that we are under the control of the mind. We can intervene. In psychology, these are called interventions into our mood and shift it to another this often in our devotional programs. We do kirtan, we do things like Jai Jai Sri Radhe, or Bhujana has another one. He requests us to repeat the names of Krishna's cows. And then we have to scream Dhavali, you know, Hansi, and so on. It's a devotional way to bring the shift moods. So it is, we feel one way when before, and afterwards we feel another way. So in the same way, when you chant, you sometimes, at least I start in a very dull way, and I can't really say I like to chant, I have to chant. And at that time, do you think the mind is more attentive, or does it tend to be more distracted? More distracted, no? When you're in a mood where you don't like it, or where you're dull, yeah, the mind will not focus on the chanting, but it will find surrogates, replacements of transcendental things, and go to material thoughts. So, at that time, you need to know what to do. Will you chant now 16 rounds in a dull mood, thinking about your shopping list, which you have to fulfill, or thinking about what impossible thing so-and-so said to you yesterday? Will you do this? Or maybe chant and again and again return to your fears? Chant like this, or will you shift the mood? Will you shift your heart? You can shift your heart. There is a science. You don't have to be under the control of the mind. You are the soul which is superior to the body and the mind, and you can change the mood. The first thing which we are knowing in ISKCON is when we feel tamasic. People get up and walk, right? Because this is tamo rajasic, and then they come more alive. This thing, when you're tired, get up and walk. We all know there are many, many, many other things you can do to change the energy, to change the mood, and to chant with gusto, with taste. Many, many other things. And if you read carefully in the scriptures where Prabhupada talks about chanting and gives these tips, they all help you to come to another thing. So the best way to bring the mind to a prayerful mood, according to what I have experienced, but you may have different experience, is to read prayers. When I'm stuck on the mental platform in a bad mood, I always take out the book Sharanagati. I even took it with me to India in case I get moody, you know, and it works for me. Or what others do, they take the cartels, of course, and they're not with many people, and they chant and sing the holy names. They may sing in their favorite tunes, and they will find them. I have seen one great devotee, when something happens to him during japa, and he becomes tired, he goes, Nityananda, Gauranga. And I have smiled happily about his scientific usage of coming to a higher level. That is also recommended in the chapter 8 of the Adi Lila. So, yes. My dear devotees, what it amounts to, all these types of things which you, first of all, please know that it is very, very important for you to develop good japa habits and chant in a good way. This is first of all the realization. Unless and until you feel, or let me these tips will will be like drops of water that fall on a duck and develop little pearls and roll down on the side. You know, they will not penetrate our mind. So we must first be interested to change something, and only then will these tips work for us. I would speak this in a general way. What is the most boring literature for you? For me, it's a cookbook. For others, was it the telephone book? They are no longer existing. The telephone numbers are now on the computer available. But why is for me the cookbook uninteresting, boring? Because I never cook. I have two left hands when it comes to cooking. It burns always, and I can't believe that it's so much salt that I put it hundreds the amount, and then it's too salty. You know, I've given up cooking. I prefer begging over cooking. Yeah, I lived when I was on San Catan. I lived for a whole year only on baked food. I would go to the German households and request for vegetarian items like nuts, raisins, and so on. Because cooking, it doesn't work with me, like so many other things. Therefore, the book is uninteresting. The same is with chanting. If you think it does not work, if you're not dedicated, if you're not willing to go into this subject matter, you will either not have an interest in this, or you will not understand the things. Because you're not really interested. Do you know this? When you read a boring book, you can try 10 times to read a paragraph and it doesn't go inside. But the moment there's something that interests you, like for instance a telephone number of an important person you want to phone, you will remember even boring numbers. Huh? Have you noticed? So with these holy name retreats, an attempt is made by the organizers of this to make you interested that there is a lot. In the book, The Living Name, the alignment process is mentioned from the body, mind, and heart. You cannot, and you say, I don't think you're less intelligent. You can write in a very with good letters. It makes sense. You are fully intelligent, but maybe you are not interested in this subject really, or you are not understanding that it's important to save your life. God, go into it. It's very easy, you know. The body, you have to sit properly, you know, and pronounce with your lips. Listen with your ears. This is how you bring the body to the task. And the mind, what do you do with the mind? You focus it on the sound, and the heart, you come in the proper mood, yeah? In the deep mood of devotion for Krishna, prayer to Krishna. You make all these three elements favorable. You want to have light on the 16 meanings of the 16 names. There are, you know, the holy name is very, very, it's Krishna. And Krishna is not, he has many sides to him. He is a very, very great personality. And acharyas who have seen or as Krishna have seen these different facets of Krishna and therefore written about different meanings. Some of them are given in the living name. There's another book called The Art of Chanting from Mahanidhi Maharaj. There you find more meanings. I think by now you can also Google on the internet. And that is what they have seen with their eyes, which are awakened with devotion. I must say, the simple meaning of Hare Krishna and Rama is given by, it's like this prayerful mood of, oh Krishna, please attract my heart towards you. This is given by Gopal Guru Goswami. And, oh Radha, please attract my heart to you. Oh Rama, you know, please make me qualified for your service. There are these things. In the living name, you will find the meaning of these names as given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is known for writing in a very, he almost always writes like as if he writes a guidebook, do like this, do like that, do like this. And therefore his meaning is chosen. He has taken the meaning, by the way, from Gopal Guru Goswami. He finds that is most applicable. My main point here, and I think it even goes beyond the, this particular question, is please, my dear devotees, the chanting of the holy name is such a powerful sadhana that when done properly, it takes care of all our spiritual needs. It purifies the heart. It enlivens various devotional sentiments. Wouldn't it be nice if you have devotional feelings all the time? Lord Chaitanya says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it enlivens devotional sentiments and so on. And but like all sadhanas, you can do it properly and have a wonderful result, or you can do mistakes. They are called aparadhas often, and then you don't find these results. And when you feel, especially after the 64 rounds day, that oh, the results have not yet come, then I recommend that you become, that you ask the question, why not? What do I miss here? And then there are many books now out. There's a very nice book also. The only quotations of Srila Prabhupada on the holy name are this thick. It's called Sri Hari Namamrita. Only quotations by Prabhupada. You can read all this and then pick the quotation you like most. Maybe you write it down and then you practice with that recommendation for a year or so, or half a year, or as long as you feel it is necessary, and then you move on. Krishna consciousness should always be an exciting process for you, where you understand, okay, I'm now on this level, let me now move to the next level. And this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, sadhana must be performed. Okay, I'm on this level, let me now see what is the next level and become interested in it. The moment you lose your interest to go to the next level, you will stay on the level where you presently are and not grow or move forward. So, this is a very helpful tip, I find. No? Yeah. And I think the 64 rounds day, so many things happen. Do you know what? Many things happen which we are not consciously aware. For instance, that Rupa Goswami sees you chanting, the holy name sees you chanting, and they will reciprocate or respond either immediately or after some time. Hare Krishna, thank you for this wonderful question. Hare Bol.
This time I took a small one. There's a limit to how much. Hare Krishna. This is a very personal question. I'm keeping my vows for about 3 years, but I broke it 3 times in my dreams. I'm not initiated, but how will I get, will I sincerely say my vows during initiation, and how to control my dreams? Initiation, one is vowing from this time forward to I will not indulge in these things. When it comes to dreams, dreams are not quite in our control. So I'm not sure how others would answer this. I would say, don't worry about your dreams, worry about your waking time. And of course, how do we control our dreams? This can ultimately, we try to fill our mind with proper good thoughts during the day, because that will tend to indicate what we dream at night. So that's the best I can do in answering this question. Said that dreams are like bubbles that come up from the subconscious, so they're not quite in our control, and I wouldn't worry about unconscious dreams, but focus more on getting good conscious dreams, conscious desires, and be eager to fulfill those good desires as we our life moves to the future. And acting in such a way that it will be helpful. Yes. Yeah, we want to make our life as much as possible consistent. Consistent, all going, our whole life, conscious, and actions going in the same direction at the same time. If we can do that, if we can line up our actions and our mind with our life's goal, that we're doing very well, and that's the best way, as much as we can, to control the dreams which spring from sometimes past lives and sometimes from consciousness. Have any of you ever dreamed that you were flying? I dream that sometimes. So not only are they bad dreams, they come and they go, also my flying dreams come and go. But I can't do it on will. There are people who practice, there's a name for it, I can't remember it right now, but lucid dreaming, yeah. But that's not what we want to do. We want to have lucid living and Krishna consciousness. And we want to have Krishna conscious thoughts going into our future. And as Maharaj just said, if we think about carefully what's my next step, that's also a wonderful way to move forward. That's the best I can do with that. I wouldn't worry so much about bad dreams, but try to make our life more in harmony with our highest goals, our mental life and our practical physical life.
Seems that Krishna gives many devotees a belt of mercy early on, and then requires the devotee to work hard to find the pure name.
the best for us, and that the special mercy he gives us early on to give us the taste is his mercy, and the requirement that we also have to do our own hard work is also his mercy. Because ultimately he wants us to come back to him, to come back home, back to Godhead. So whatever he does is designed ultimately to help us return to him. Hare Krishna.
Excitement in.
How do we avoid offenses while chanting? And if offenses were made previously, how do we deal with their consequences which affect our chanting? So, while we chant, there is in particular one offense which happens during the practice. And a Vaishnava that we do usually outside of the chanting, you know, or to consider the Vedic scriptures, you know, and to think that they're interpreting, they're not true, fully true, they're exaggerating, and so on, that we do outside of the practice. But while we are sitting down and taking our beads and chanting, the challenge, the most challenging offense is, of course, inattention, that our mind starts to wander. And there are various causes for this inattention, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed, but it's inattention, really. And there are a few things which can help us to be more attentive. Like Prabhupada says, the preferred time for chanting is the morning hours. It's simply because at that time the mind is not yet so full with impressions, and maybe even more important, it's when sattva gun, the mode of goodness, is prominent. So we can align our lifestyle that we go, you know, not too late to bed, and then we can utilize the next morning, these early morning hours. It also helps when you want to chant attentively to do so in a conducive atmosphere. Maybe you have a home altar, or when you're in a temple, living in a temple, then you go to the temple room. I think we all felt the benefit of chanting here together, or in Teh Kadamba, being together in a room, being packed up, as Prabhupada would say. Of what I do when I travel, I have a few photos of my deities. One deity, and I have three photos. Prabhupada, then I have one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, and then one of Radha and Krishna. Somehow I got a very nice picture from the Mayapur Radha Madhava, which I like very much. It is a three-dimensional photo which I liked as a child, you know. Turn them and they move and all. and I put them up, and then I sit before them, and then I chant. I find it very helpful to focus my mind, my gaze on them. There's one thing you must know: when the eyes start to move and look around, then the mind is on. try to do like this and speak something that makes sense. You can't do it, you know. You flick the eyes back and forth. So very important for attention is to fix the gaze, to look at Radha and Krishna, to look at the Mahamantra. Sometimes when I'm really very bad in focus, I have the written Mahamantra and I read the mantra while I chant, almost as if I would read in a book, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, like this. So the main offense you can do really is inattention, and it says from this inattention spring up all other aparadhas. Actually, my dear devotees, I have shocking news for you. The attention which you give to Krishna will reflect in your chanting. When you are very attentive to Krishna, you will be very attentive to Krishna. And let us turn it now around, the statement. The inattention when you chant is only an indication how inattentive and forgetful you are towards Krishna. The two are very, very linked, very much linked. So inattention is something that is a good project to work on. And please just know yourself a little. And there are atmospheres which increase your attention, and there are definitely atmospheres, activities, and so on, which take away from your attention. How do we deal with the consequences of the offenses which affect our chanting? I can only say, don't lose heart. It will pass. The effect of offenses in our chanting is that we do not have taste. There's a prayer to Krishna. It comes in the Sharanagati prayers. It says, O Krishna, maintain my life by giving me taste in the holy name. So yeah, then Krishna has withdrawn from you, and Krishna only withdraws for one reason, and one reason only, that is aparadha, offenses. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the offensive person. He says he is like a servant who, although he gets everything from his master, has turned against his master. He gets food, he gets lodges. Maybe the master suggested the future, the wife he has married. He is really kept by the good master, like a family member, like that. But somehow the servant has become offensive and turns against the master by body, doing things, by thinking things, by speaking things against him, and in this way has turned against him. So what is the master's reaction? The master, who is merciful or is a good-hearted person, will not drop the servant entirely. He will even maintain him. He will allow him to stay on and living. He will make a distance. He said, you may not, don't come and serve the breakfast, you know. Don't, please for a moment, for some time, stay a little bit in the distance, you know. But still, he maintains him with the minimal things which the servant needs to survive. And then after some time, when the servant has reformed and changed, after all, he's a servant, this is a temporary.
sense, then the master welcomes him even in those close services. So, yes, the effect of offenses is that Krishna keeps us distant and he gives us so much, he does not give us so much taste which would nourish our spiritual life. He only maintains us, the oxygen supply is still there, the air is still there, the water is still there, food is there, contacts are there. You have still some friends, you can go. Krishna doesn't, totally bring you immediately into hell. No, he maintains you. But his maintenance is restricted and it's for sure he withdraws the taste in the processes. Imagine someone puts an offensive person would still have a tremendous taste for devotional service, but hate Krishna, it just can't go together. So the taste is immediately withdrawn when we do things against Krishna. But tolerate them. The Padma Purana has an advice to offensive chanters. The offensive chanter, the Padma Purana says, should go on and keep on chanting because the repeated chanting is the only possible way to become free from offenses. So even if you have no taste because of the experiencing the effect of aparadhas, keep on chanting and show Krishna that you are not quitting the relationship. And then Krishna will see, okay. After some time, he will take away this terrible dryness. Or good English word is aridity. It's just so like in a desert. And he takes that away, and then you are. Then he gives you again.
Discussion of the conditions favorable for chanting, and that is Tulsi Devi. It's very powerful. Haridas Thakur himself, the Namacharya, showed the example of chanting in front of Tulsi Devi.
Only recently it became clear the constant chanting of Harinam is not some poetic device or figure of speech, but actually the practice and the goal of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Obviously, the third verse of Shikshastakam talks about it and gives direction of how it is to be done. In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes in 9:27, if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra on the mantra around his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and greatest yogi. Also, Srila Prabhupada instructed his disciples how to observe karti, is to give up eating and sleeping and chant 24 hours a day. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes a Madhyamadakari as one who chants constantly. So, can you please share some insights on what does it practically mean to chant constantly and what practical steps can we take in that direction? The perfection of chanting constantly is done very easily if one loves Krishna. be some days where everything you do seems to be going opposite the way you want. So those difficult circumstances, those painful circumstances where we are confronted with our tininess, insignificance, these are perfect times to remember that in fact we are insignificant. But we're not only insignificant, we're not simply insignificant, we're insignificant servants. So when one is confronted with one's insignificance, simultaneously understanding that one is a servant, and then understanding the nature of our master, then we learn the art of prayer. I remember reading how Srila Prabhupada in a BTG was written in another book, how he prayed to Sri Advaita Charya in Shantipur that I'm to go on this great mission on the order of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this was before Srila Prabhupada left for the West. I'm praying in a humble state of mind. I don't have the power to do this. When Prabhupada landed in the two poems that he wrote, one in Boston in 1966 and one in New York, he was considering himself a beggar. But he was begging from his all-powerful master. So to do anything in this world as a servant, to do it sincerely, regularly, with a full heart, will cause us many times to confront the fact that we are insignificant, and whatever we have done, we have not done by our own power. We've done it by the power of our very wonderful master. And then to take shelter. And in that taking shelter, we're remembering. We can take shelter by chanting. By chanting in a taking shelter mood. Please allow me to serve you. Unless you give me the strength and intelligence to cook properly. I can't cook. If I can't even sleep properly. I can't distribute properly. I can't speak properly. Oh, Master, how can I serve you? Please give me the strength to serve you. And then when Krishna does reciprocate, then our faith increases that we are in the hands of the proper master who will always give us shelter in our insignificant attempts to serve. So that remembrance of Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, no one is capable, practically speaking, in this age, especially in the beginning stages. And Prabhupada warned us so much of imitating Haridas Thakur and seeing how others were attempting to imitate Haridas Thakur and failing. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a whole song about this, about the mind. And it's, we want to show people that you can do Nirjan Bhajan and chant continuously 24 hours a day. But it's another cheating aspect, Kaitava aspect of the mind. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada gave us a Hare Krishna movement that has such a big dream to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious. And such a big aspiration that there's room for everyone to take up a service humbly and try to do it in a sincere and regular way, and to do some service, and that will ultimately teach us to depend on Krishna, to remember Krishna, to always chant Krishna's names. Because if we fail, we'll be praying to Krishna. And if we succeed to some degree, we'll be thanking Krishna and saying,
Sri Prabhu said he heard or read that Srila Prabhupada said that if you are having trouble enunciating the holy name, you can hear the chanting of another devotee who chants nicely. Once Srila Prabhupada came in the temple room in Dallas, and the devotees were playing his japa tape. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Why are you playing my japa tape? You should be hearing your own japa, not my japa." Of course, it's nice to chant with Srila Prabhupada and in temples where they do play Srila Prabhupada's japa tape. I advise them to play it at the volume of the other chanters so that we can hear ourselves chant, but also do so in the company of Srila Prabhupada. But I don't know exactly what it means. If you're having trouble enunciating the holy name, you can hear the chanting of another devotee who chants nicely. But that's also good.
A day. And I said, no, much. It's such a pleasure to listen to these memories. We are very fortunate to have devotees who had interactions with Srila Prabhupada. And yes,
I'm learning how to do nice kirtans, and I'm also hearing and reading about holy name and prayers to the holy name to develop the proper attitude and mood. But many devotees say, if you do nice kirtans, you will attract the opposite sex. Is it that I should not do kirtans? In fact, this is my cherished desires, to learn kirtan specifically for the pleasure of the Lord.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. it depends what you say is a nice kirtan. Let's start there. If your definition of nice kirtan is, first of all, let's dress nicely for the kirtan, then if you're a woman, let's put nice decorations on the eyes. If you're a man, let's have some impressive tattoo, maybe of the holy name, and just take sure, great care that the sleeve is not to the hand, but it is ending here, and then I'm now nicely prepared, nicely dressed, nice tattoos, everything is in place. Now let's sit down and have a very, let's pick melodies that have the chords of contemporary Bollywood movies that will go very well with our crowd. You know, in other words, if you go like that, it might happen that you have entered the world of kirtan on the wrong foot and have a result that is not good. So we need to define what is nice kirtan. And kirtan is really for the pleasure of Krishna. Prabhupada wrote to kirtan leaders, your business is not to attract a crowd. You would do all these and many other things most probably to attract a crowd. Your purpose is to satisfy Krishna. Of course, that should not mean that the kirtan leader now does exactly the opposite. He does he has a behavior that scares people away. That's not the idea, but the focus is there. And also nice kirtan is really when you help your audience also to absorb themselves in Krishna as a kirtan leader. So it's I've seen the good kirtan leaders, they deflect from themselves. What this means is they are like lecturers. When you praise a lecturer, oh, you spoke so nicely, the lecturer will say, oh, thank you, but I collected things from Prabhupada and from the scriptures and so on. I'm not the origin of these thoughts and so on. And yesterday I met a devotee who is the best-selling author of ISKCON. Wow. And I said, good night, best-selling author. And he just had such a laughter so that we could see he was not identified with this. He felt, yes, Krishna allowed me to report about his life. After all, it's his life which I'm reporting. And, you know, devotees know putting yourself in the center in anything is kirtan or in service. You set yourself up for misery, because the moment you develop attachments, you must suffer. The world is
with a Dutch German sitting before you. I had to learn this the hard way. I was very ambitious in my life and attached to results and so much mental anxieties come from that. A devotee should have this motivation. Krishna is in control. When such a devotee experiences success, he thinks, oh, thank you, Krishna. But if he should experience failure, he will say, Krishna, it was not your desire that this could come out. See, an unattached devotee who is just trying to please Krishna is equiposed in both success and failure. It's the safest position in this world to try your best to take yourself out of the center and try your best to satisfy the spiritual master, Krishna, the devotees also, and Krishna. Krishna is sometimes far away for our thought, but he is the spiritual master and the devotees are there. Imagine you come to the Mangal, to the Darshan Aarti of Shishi Krishna Balaram in the Balaram Mandir. Okay? So there is a new initiate. He was initiated and his guru somehow had good relations to the main pujari, and he asked the main pujari, can you please allow my second initiated disciple to do the darshan party, you know, to wave the chamara and everything, draw the curtain. And the main pujari says, yeah, that's simple, one doesn't need to know so much. And so he can come tomorrow at 7:10, he should be latest there. So then 7:14 comes, and the newly initiated pujari is there. He has carefully chosen his dress. He has carefully dressed in a way that everyone sees his new tattoos on his upper arms and on even on his leg, where that heel is very fashionable in his gun. And so on. And everyone waits for the curtain, for the concha to be blown, but he's there making Arnold Schwarzenegger muscle movements, displaying his heel. There's an ohm just over the heel. And so on and so forth. What would we say? We would say, we didn't come to see you. We want to see Krishna Balaram. So if he would go on like this, maybe one sincere Swami would take a tomato and throw it at him. So this is also when a kirtan leader is leading kirtan. We don't come for you, Mr. Kirtan leader. We want to be absorbed in the chanting of the holy name. I think the young folks amongst us like this analogy. The old ones say, I'm not interested in tattoo anyway. Can you please give more relevant examples? I could, but I will not. So, yes, there's a very important, if you want to be a lead, a nice kirtan, to know put Krishna in the center and help your audience to absorb themselves in the kirtan. You can sometimes check by just turning around and seeing, is everyone chanting? Are they moving their lips? Are they there? And then you can try to pull everyone into the chanting so that they are absorbed in chanting. Chanting the Lord's name. Hare Krishna.
Please give some important tips to keep the same energy after the retreat. have gained chanting with 300 devotees in the shelter of Kira's Govardhan. And how can I keep this everything? And I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but it's not that easy. I usually find I can keep some of it until I go through security at the airport, and then it's all gone. They confiscate everything. But one way they have concluded is that we should listen to the recordings. It's extremely helpful. Listen to the recordings. Think about listening to the recordings, because in the recordings are the instructions, the kirtans, and the mood, that same mood is more easily generated in the heart than the consciousness. And that mood is very sweet and it's very attractive. And we meditate upon it and think about it. But listening to the recordings is, and coming back year after year, is also very helpful. Because the sanskara and the impressions become more permanently established. It's like when you meet a person for the first time, you have something of a relationship, but if you meet them again and again and again and again and again, the relationship hopefully will just deepen. So some of us, we've been introduced to Giriraj Govardhan for the first time even, and we should keep up our relationship with Giriraj and with the holy names and with the devotees. And then when we hear the instructions again and again, we should try and apply them as best we are able.
Can I please say something on this, for example?
Yes, please.
Thank you. This is a very important question. Very, very important question. How can we maintain what we have been gotten? Please look at this little graph. I know it's not, you won't be able to read it from the distance, but let us say here's the retreat and your experiences at Giriraj's lotus feet or in Tirthakadamba. So when you go now to your home country, you pass through the security check, so on, then you will see how the experience wanes, especially if you are searched or if something unpleasant should happen. Then you come home, but then you should take one practice, not two, not three, not four, one single practice that you have learned new. You do this, you stay with that one single practice, and you will experience some result that was not there before, because you didn't do that practice before. Then, when you experience this result, something enters your life that comes from you, but it needed to be awakened so that you can utilize it. The English word for this is self. Oh, here I need to turn to my English speaking. Self-efficacy. Is that the right word?
Actualization.
Self-actualization is also a word for it. Something which was sleeping, you could find, in a simple language, a newfound enthusiasm. You will find, wow, this worked. Oh, I heard from Bhurijan Prabhu. I heard from Giriraj Maharaj. I heard this and that from devotees during sharing sessions. And I did it, and wow, this is the result. And from this enthusiasm, appears, and this simple ISKCON language wow effect, you know, this surprise, this invigorating insight, you will find strength which was not there before, and you will be able to do. So the mistake which we do when we go to retreats or to festivals or to pilgrimage, we just, the more we allow how the material nature just swipes all that which was inscripted in us away, as if it erases everything from the thing. But if you keep one thing, and this is how you keep it, practice it, then something does change in you. You become, you awaken an enthusiasm which was not there before, which will help you. Don't become a retreat junkie, that you can only function when you get your retreat infusion. Yes, come of course again and again to the retreat, but it would not be good to create with these retreats a culture of dependency on this one thing, on this one environment, on this one thing, because now we can travel, my dear devotees. Now you had the Lakshmi to come here. Now it is, everything is still possible, but the society in 10 years won't be what it is now. I think the science, this is not a pessimistic statement, but maybe you will find a donkey and come by donkey here, that is, or any other thing. I'm not saying it's not possible to come here. It will be possible somehow or other, but it will be differently possible. It's time now to learn also to fly on our own. After all, at the moment of death, there will be no one who gives you a lecture what you should do. You have to be able to fly on your own at that time, and you need to learn this. And this is a very good way. If you, therefore, it's always good to take notes on the things where you felt, well, this is really something I would like to pay attention to. It's very important to do this. Otherwise, everything will disappear in an overcooked kitri of undigested memories. In other words, there's so many things that happened, and all becomes one stew at the end, without any possibility to distinguish what was there. Therefore, just one thing you can isolate, or those who have a more good digestive quality can, of course, take more. But I always take only one, because I'm a little bit not so scholarly or whatever. One thing, and for me, it's already clear what I take. It was in the lecture of Bhurijan Prabhu, where you add prayer to the hearing and the chanting. I will now find this morning walk, then I will read the exact story which he told, you know, which he exactly told. I will read that, and I will read the commentaries of on this pastime, and then I will add this prayer. It immediately sounded right. This is what you have overlooked these years, so now you need to take it. That's my thing which I take, and so on. So every one of you must have had some aha moment. We say in German language, do you say like this in your language also? And you go, aha, you know, oh. And you take this with you and practice. And then, as Bhurijan Prabhu said, yes, some of us know who are here in the crowd. If you come regularly to the Govardhan retreat, did, listen to this, he actually, when he could not come due to work reasons, he put his family into an American pickup car, went into some rented a cabin in the mountain, and then listened to all the recordings and practiced everything while his children were maybe snowballing outside or you know, doing. He made it a family excursion, but he personally got up early, like on retreat, and he then did everything, chanted his rounds, chanted the Guru Vastakam prayer, did everything as if he is there, and then listened to the recording. Sometimes he said he listened to recordings three times. Imagine, three times. So if I would tell you the name of the devotee, he wrote this letter to me in confidence, so I cannot tell you. And you would look at him, he looks very advanced. Because he put some effort in it, and therefore could see how he had an inner growth and progression in his Krishna consciousness. So pick one thing is my suggestion, and bring that with you. This one thing is even the immigration police people can't take it away from you. when you go to Australia, I hear you cannot take wood into the country. So sometimes they take wooden beads away, but they can't take this one thing away from you that you have gained and you practice. You know? And then you will see that self-actualization, something is evoked. Some force is awakened within you that helps you to move on. And then come back to the next retreat. Hare Krishna.
Interesting point. That was really a suggestion more out of your experience that everyone think of one thing. And I noticed it was 12 o'clock now. And I was wondering if there were more parts of the program, or possibly maybe the devotees could go into small groups and discuss what one thing they would like to take with them.
That's a wonderful suggestion. Can we build one group of us here?
Okay. Form yourself into small groups, 5 to 8 persons. It makes it easier if you all speak the same language, obviously. And then start discussing what one thing you'd like to take with you. What struck you or inspired you to such a degree that it would go on so deeply that it's yours.